Hello and welcome back to the Grazia Life Advice Podcast. I hope you're having a really good week. In today's episode, we hear some great advice from an award-winning British designer.
Hi, my name is Anya Haimach. I am a designer, in fashion, a mother, a woman in business, the many different roles that we all lead. And I'm thrilled to be this week's guest on the Grazia Life Advice Podcast.
Anya chats about treating imposter syndrome as a tool to make you better, rather than something that weighs you down.
Imposter syndrome, or doubt, if you like, is something that makes you good. You know, it actually makes you kind of not rest on your laurels. It makes you sort of raise your game. It makes you question yourself before you speak.
She talks about breaking through creative walls and sustainability in fashion.
Fashion should be about making you feel good, and for me, humour is a really important element of that.
And Anya talks to us about being a stepmother and the powerful opportunities of blended families.
But it's such a lovely, complicated but kind of wonderful journey, actually. Having stepchildren, and I think that it's becoming so normal that actually everyone's really sort of learning to really love it. It certainly gives me so much pleasure.
All that and more is coming up in this chat, and we also find out Anya Hindmarsh's secret to inner peace in a labeling machine. Anya, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. I've been a big fan of your work for a number of years and lucky enough to come to some of your shows in my role as a magazine editor. So I'm really excited about talking to you today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you very much. It's so nice to chat. I can't see you because my camera is not working, but it's incredibly nice to chat to you.
And we're here to talk about something that's maybe a little bit different to what you're normally asked about, which is really like your wide-ranging life advice. And you've had an incredible career, and also, as you identified yourself, you're a mother, and parenting has also been super important to you in your life. So I'm really excited to get into all of that, and interested very much in the first piece of advice that you sent me, which is that things come of things. Could you tell me a bit about what you mean by this?
Well, I think it's really important to do things. And I've always found that the more you do, the luckier you get in many ways. And I remember someone once saying to me that actually, if you look at a life event that's been has had a good outcome, so maybe, you know, something good happened or some amazing project or collaboration, whatever it might be, if you actually trace the steps backwards from that and the things that led up to that, then actually you trace back to the fact that if you hadn't gone to that dinner that you didn't want to go to because you were too tired on a Monday night, that you might not have met that person that suggested that thing that gave you that idea, that, you know, led to meeting that person that actually helped that collaboration, etc. So it's sort of like a snakes and ladders idea, that actually, you know, if you do things, it leads to things, and you've no idea of the outcome of that one small thing. So I always think, if in doubt, do things, because things do come of things. So that's always been one of my mottos.
I think that's so true. And just sort of saying yes to things, as you said, like the dinner that you're not looking forward to. And it's always those things where, yeah, you have that kind of amazing connection with someone, or you get talking and exchange numbers, and then it might not be straight away, but maybe in like a few months or even years, you're kind of thinking of them and getting back in touch, and it's leading to something. I love it when that happens.
No, it's so true. And I think that, you know, it is, it's quite, but I was talking to my kids, I'm like, you know, even if you're, you know, starting out at university and you don't feel like it, but just go to that thing, because actually it often leads to something and mostly good, actually. So it sort of takes energy and it takes courage sometimes, but it is, it does make you luckier. That's always been my view.
And I guess in the same vein, just the sort of idea of being kind and being nice to people, because you never know when that is going to come back to you as well.
I mean, that's just totally a given. I mean, I just think if you put bad vibes out there, absolutely, it always comes back to you. And I think likewise, if you're nice to someone, even, you know, always, hopefully, it's nothing that you expect back. But it's amazing if you know, it's the favor bank. They always say, don't they, that, you know, you pay in and you expect nothing back. But actually, one day, if you do need it, it pays out. And I'm such a believer in that, actually. And the times where, you know, you suddenly get in a bit of a fix and you ring up that person to say, help me. But actually, they remember that you really helped them, or you were kind to them, or you introduce them to someone, whatever it might be. So I'm a huge believer in the favor bank. It's very important.
Totally. I've started being extra nice and helpful to all of the Gen Z colleagues at work, so all of the early 20 somethings because I know that they're going to be the ones giving me jobs in like 10 years time.
But then you're you're doing it because you're expecting something. The way it works is if you do it out of the kindness of your heart, you see.
Very true, very true. No. I'm not that cynical. And your second piece of advice, Anya, is to put your own oxygen mask on first. And I'm expecting that this isn't quite as literal as it might sound. Tell me more.
Well, I think, you know, as I think women have very complicated roles, you know, so often a lot of the sort of family life tends to fall to them less and less, actually. But I think certainly at my age, I'm 53, and I always talk about the transition generation, which is the generation where you kind of are working as hard as your father did, and often have the memory perhaps of a mother that wasn't, you know, because in those days certainly my mother wasn't working as hard as my father. So you're trying to live up to the sort of role your mother played, and yet you're actually working as hard as your dad did. And I think it's quite hard, actually. And so for that generation, that transition generation, that even for anyone trying to juggle work and kids and a career and all the stuff that we have thrown at us, you actually need to make sure that you look after yourself and don't, and you prioritize that to a certain extent, because so often if you're happy and upbeat and feel good and on top of what you're doing, that really filters through the family, it filters through your business life and your career, and is actually important for your health. So I think often we feel guilty to actually take that time out to go and have a nice walk or go to that yoga class or meet that friend, because that's what you need to do and have a nice chat and kind of feel better for it. And actually, I think it's actually, I would argue, short-sighted not to. So I think we need to start by making sure that we look after ourselves at least as well as we would someone else.
Yeah. And I was going to ask actually what some of those things could be. You mentioned yoga class and walking and seeing your friends. And is there anything else that for you feels like those moments of taking care of yourself first?
Well, you know, it can be everything from, you know, just having a really nice glass of wine, frankly, you know, or actually the exercise, or taking time to go and, you know, sort out your outfit so that you can get up in the morning and quickly and not have to sort of faff. It's all those things that just make you kind of life easier, and in turn that makes you feel better and more like you're coping. I think that feeling of not coping is really wearing and really hard, and it tends to bleed into the mood of the family and into your role at work and so on. So I think it's not short-sighted and it's totally not selfish. I think it's really important.
Yeah, and it's so funny how quickly you can sort of lose that grip of control. Like, I don't know about you, but there's times in the week when, you know, I've got a young kid and you just feel like the house has got out of control, or your desk isn't tidy, and then it just makes you feel like your mind isn't tidy, and then suddenly like your grip on everything starts to sort of crumble. And then to just have that one thing you can do that can kind of bring you back and send to yourself.
I think it's so important. And I mean, I think that is the norm for so many, you know, especially working women, where you are really juggling so much, and it's just incredibly hard, honestly. So it's funny. I mean, I have a bit of a labeling habit. You know, I like to have everything very organized. I think that I love being so organized and have everything labeled, just because when I feel out of control, it makes me feel in control. Just, it's also an incredibly efficient way of running your life.
This is what I need. A labeling machine. What kind of thing do you label?
Everything. So my best ever present was a labeling machine from my brother.
Even things that it's like obvious what it is.
We actually had a joke dinner once where we actually labeled fork, knife, spoon, because it is my passion. But in fact, I started a part of the collection, actually, which is called the labeled collection, which is everything that, you know, it's pencils, and then it sort of says makeup and, you know, brushes. So it's just everything has a place, and everything in its place, and that somehow just makes me feel very organized and makes
so
me feel a better
pleasing
person.
Creatively, you shared some advice, your third piece of advice, about what you do when you hit a brick wall, and you say that you find a way over it, round it, or through it, which makes me think of that brilliant children's book, We're Going on a Bear Hunt.
Which I can recite by heart, I think. Yes, well, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's so often the case that you hit what I call the creative dip. You start out with an idea, and this not necessarily just in a kind of creative world, it might be at home or, you know, with kids or in any part of anyone's life, but you start off with an idea, you love it, and then you dig into it and it gets a bit harder because perhaps it's a budget issue, or perhaps it's kind of not working, or perhaps it's, you know, not possible. And you sort of push into it, you keep going, and you get to the point where you think, actually, I hate the idea. And then you get to the lowest part of the dip where you even hate yourself. And then slowly you kind of work through that. And then you kind of go, maybe it's not so bad. And actually, maybe I could try something else and perhaps it'll work like that. And then you sort of get to, then you finally kind of, you know, launch it. And you're like, actually, I love it. And that creative dip is very, very hard. And I think you know, I was talking about you have to sort of find your way literally through it, round it, or over it. And, you know, through it can hurt, frankly. So it's, but it is really part of achieving things in many ways, I think, especially creatively. Certainly in running a business, there's a lot of through it in running a business.
Yeah. And how does collaboration work in those sort of instances? Because I feel like, as you know, the designer, you must sometimes feel like you're carrying a lot of the burden of those decisions. And do you have people that you draw on, that you share things with, that help you find those ways through, round, over it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I for years I worked on my own, and that was very hard, actually, because you've no one really to sort of, you know, to sort of just riff with and sort of like, what do you think? And how about this? And no, how about that? Now I have a great team, and we've all worked together for, you know, many, many years. It's only sort of 20 years. So we're like this sort of well-oiled sort of family of, you know, and very much, we always laugh. In fact, when we get to the end of a project, we go, that was great, but whose idea was that? Like, was it mine? You go, no, it was yours. No, actually, was it mine? And we all have a laugh about actually who really, but the truth is it's sort of, someone has a bit of a germ of an idea, and someone then runs with that, and then someone hands that over, and then actually someone pulls it apart and makes it better, and it's completely collaborative. Yeah. And I think creativity is often best that way, you know, because you get lots of different heads on it.
Yeah. We'll be right back with Anya after this short break. And we're back with Anya Hindmarsh, who is sharing her amazing business and life advice with us. And you spoke there about your business and your team being a bit like a family. Your own family is quite interesting as well. You are a parent and a step parent. And your advice, your fourth piece of advice, is to remember that if you criticize a child's parent, you're criticizing half of the child. And presumably that's something that you've really learned from being a step parent. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm lucky enough, I have five children. I'm lucky enough to have inherited three bereaved children. Actually, they lost their mum when they were very little. I met them when they were 1, 3, and 4. So they'd lost their mum just 6 months before that. So not that I would ever want to criticize her, but it's quite interesting. I've become quite sort of sensitive to you know, steps and modern families and mixed families and all the different sort of lovely variations we have these days, which can work really successfully, actually. And I think and hope that mine does, actually. It's quite interesting how people, I think I've often seen people forget that if they say something negative about, you know, perhaps in a divorce situation, that's more than a brief situation, but in any situation about one of their parents, actually you are saying something negative about half of them. And it's quite easy to forget that, but it's quite wounding for a child. And so it's something that just really struck me that it's so important to be really aware of that. But it's such a lovely, complicated, but kind of wonderful journey, actually, having stepchildren. And I think that it's becoming so normal that actually everyone's really sort of learning to really love it. Like, certainly it gives me so much pleasure.
Would you have any other advice for anyone listening who's recently becoming a step-parent?
Honestly, communication is just the most important thing. I think total honesty, and just be vulnerable with children as well, and say, look, I got that really wrong and I'm so sorry. And, you know, but something, because actually, if you just love them, it's quite simple. Just love them to bits and be honest. And sometimes also just, you know, think before you speak and actually just sort of hold back. Just, you know, keep the mood fun and nice and kind and honest. It's not rocket science. It really isn't. And yet it can be quite complicated at times too. There's lots of emotion and feelings, and we bring all the stuff that we all had with our own upbringing, and it's complicated stuff, families. But actually, ultimately, if you can just love them to bits and be kind and be really honest, I think it tends to work as well as it can.
Yeah. And do you find that your family is becoming more and more the quote unquote norm in terms of this idea of a nuclear family? You know, I kind of really relate, because I have a family with my wife and we have a daughter together, and so we're like a queer family and we have a big extended family as well. And so I'm very much of the belief that the whole notion of family is changing, and I think it's really interesting and fantastic, actually. And I wondered if you felt the same.
100%. And what's so exciting, I think, about different families is the more there are of them, the less abnormal it seems. And ultimately, I just think it's, you know, children need to be loved. I think they need to know where they've come from. I think that's also an important thing. I think, you know, it's sort of your heritage, you know, have you got someone's nose, or it's also important to children as well. And it's trying to navigate that as a parent of you know, children that you've either adopted or bringing up from that belong to someone else. You know, I've found it's incredibly important to children, that as it is to me. I mean, I you know, I care about where I come from too. It's sort of part of understanding who you are. But I think it is becoming more normal, and I think people are so open about it now, and ultimately, you know, to be loved is such a special thing, isn't it? To be part of a happy, loving family is really what gives you and children what they need, which is confidence to, you know, to go out into the world and to do the best they can. That's the foundation they need. So I think, yeah, you're right, it's becoming so much more normal. I think that's fantastic.
Your fifth piece of advice is about taking care. We've talked about taking care of ourselves, taking care of families and big blended families, and this piece of advice is about taking care of the planet and sustainability is obviously something that's super important to you and your business. Tell me about that.
Well, I'm quite frightened, isn't that? You know, I think we all are, really. It's hard to, you know, we all can all see these terrible weather changes of floods and heat waves and fires and becoming more and more normal. And I think, you know, if you watch much of COP, but all the people standing outside with those signs from tiny low-lying islands, and, you know, it's so serious. And so it's hard to know what to do. It's hard to know what to do as individuals, how to sort of make those changes. And so I think it's really about applying common sense, actually. I think we really need to urgently apply common sense to the way we behave. And that is, you know, about buying your food more locally, about, you know, reusing things, you know, just not putting things into landfill. It's sort of obvious. How can we, you know, keep things that might have gone into landfill and reuse them again and upcycle and repurpose, and just applying common sense to life. But it's really incumbent upon us now to do this all really damn quickly, because it's going to get very uncomfortable. And I mean, if you talk, a lot of the projects we've done, from, you know, I am not a plastic bag to I am a plastic bag, to Return to Nature, which is a project which is about trying to make a bag that could never end up in landfill because it would biodegrade like a natural apple would when it fell from a tree, you know, and nourish the soil again. And just trying to all think about how we can change the way we behave, because, you know, talking to a lot of academics and the research in these projects, it's really frightening. Like, it's like too late. You know,
the more you learn, the worse it gets in some respects.
It's quite terrifying. And I think it is, you know, if we literally in the next, you know, few years make some dramatic changes with the following wind and quite a bit of luck and some wonderful technological advancement, we'll, you know, we might sort of push through, but it's really, it's now. So I think that we need to put that all firmly on our agendas, and it has to be any, you know, really big part of the way we live and think.
Yeah, absolutely. Your sixth piece of advice is about imposter syndrome. And you say, remember that everyone feels exactly the same, even if they pretend they don't. Do you have any personal experiences of imposter syndrome? Is it something you still experience, or have you found a way around it?
Every day, imposter syndrome, or doubt, if you like, is something that makes you good. You know, it actually makes you kind of not rest on your laurels. It makes you sort of raise your game. It makes you question yourself before you speak. And I really learned to now try and reframe imposter syndrome as something that's actually really helpful. It's that sort of gremlin that sits on your shoulder to kind of, you know, just keep you in check. And I think everyone struggles with it, and everyone struggles with thinking that no one else struggles with it. So, you know, I'm here loudly saying that it is totally normal. And I think it's the same for anyone I've ever met, you know, whether they're the Prime Minister or, you know, I'm sure the Queen of England. It is so completely normal. It's really important that we share that very honestly, actually.
I wonder if the Queen does experience imposter syndrome. That's I've never considered
she
that.
She must do. She must
Can
do.
You imagine? Well,
sure, when she's sitting with some massive sort of, you know, scientific academic, you know, guru.
Maybe.
She must. So everyone does. Of course they do. Yeah. Everyone does. Although she's pretty brilliant. How could she? I do agree. But it is very normal. And I think so many people worry that it's just them, and it's not. I think it's very important that we all say that loudly.
Mm. I feel like I've noticed a lot in the fashion world that it's very prevalent, because it seems, from dipping in and out of doing fashion weeks and stuff myself, there's this sense that everybody else is really cool and has it down and is wearing the right thing, and perhaps you don't. And I personally just had to completely get over that, because it was just crippling otherwise, and just think everybody here is riddled with the same anxiety about exactly the same thing and is worrying that they're wearing the wrong thing, or, you know.
Well, exactly. But don't you think also the coolest people are the people that don't care?
Exactly.
They're the people that I so admire. And bear in mind also that I think that the only thing that is worth striving for is feeling confident and good enough about yourself. That's sort of, that's really the only thing, because actually it's also the people who are confident look great even if they're not wearing something cool, because actually they just, they're very comfortable in their own skin. They just wear it, you know, they're the best version of themselves that day, and they hold themselves up high and straight and look you in the eye. And that's what's cool more than any. I've seen a whole lot of people that actually don't look very cool in the coolest outfit because they're not quite sort of owning it, you know. So it's such, it's such a sort of, it's such a mixed, confused message, I think, in many ways. The people I most admire are those people that don't care.
Absolutely. And Nirvana, that actually brings us onto your this brings us onto your piece of bad advice, your final piece of bad advice. And the bad advice that you've shared with us is to try and be like everyone else, or to try and be as good as everyone else. When did you realize that you would be better off not being like anyone else?
Well, I've always loved that quote by Oscar Wilde, and I'm going to misquote it, but it's be yourself, all the other places are taken. And it's so true, isn't it? I remember reading that, and it's just being a sort of bit of a light bulb moment, because so often I think people say to children, you know, why can't you be like so-and-so? She's sporty, or she's clever, or she works hard and she does her homework and she remembers to brush her teeth, you know? And so you're always sort of being told to be like someone else. And actually you shouldn't, you should absolutely own who you are, and not try and be like anyone else. Anyway, it doesn't, it's not very convincing. You know, you are you, you've just got to do what you do. And I think certainly in my industry and in a creative world, it's very distracting looking at what other people are doing. You've just got to do what, you know, what inspires you, what you love, what you think is important or beautiful, or, you know, part of your brand or who you are. So I think it's very important to remember that. And I love that quote. And I've got it actually embossed into a lovely leather book. And it gives me great pleasure.
Oh, I love that. And I think that that comes through so much in your accessories and in your designs, like just the joy of individualism. There's something just so uplifting about it and fun. And I think that you can really only get to that place if you have like fully just accepted yourself for who you are. Then you can kind of have a laugh about yourself as well.
Well, I think it's quite disarming as well, isn't it? It's always, I think, that sort of sense of self-awareness and humor is sometimes probably also a bit of a shield. But I do think though that in that achingly world cool world of fashion that you know so well, it can make a lot of people quite unhappy by always feeling they're not quite right. And that's a real shame, I think. I think fashion should be about making you feel good, and for me humor is a really important element of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Anya, it's been so wonderful to talk to you today. I feel really uplifted and inspired, and it's been lovely. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. So nice to chat.
Thank you very much. Lovely to chat. And your book is actually a piece of advice in itself. It's called If in Doubt, Wash Your Hair. Without giving the whole book away, could you give us like the top line explanation of that bit of advice?
Well, I think two things. The first is that we all know that sometimes if you've got freshly washed hair, you feel like you can sort of take on the world. And that small bit of sort of other silly advice is actually, of course, about self-care and confidence, but also has the word doubt in it. And I'm a great believer in that. As I said before, we need to reframe doubt. So, yes, it was. It's a book trying to share honestly and openly what it's been like to be a mum and be a stepmom and be a woman in business and be a creative and all the ups and downs. Very, very honest book. Hopefully a kind book.
It sounds fantastic. I will definitely be getting a copy myself. Thanks again so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's Grazia Life Advice podcast. And thank you, of course, to the amazing Anya Hindmarsh for sharing all of that wisdom with us. If you've enjoyed today's episode, then please do subscribe. And if you know someone who could do with a labelling machine perhaps in their lives, then make sure you share this podcast with them. We'll be back next week. Bye.
The semi-annual warehouse clearance event is happening now at Sleep Outfitters. This is your chance to save big with up to 65% off mattresses store-wide. Plus, get a free adjustable base with select Sealy mattresses. These limited-time warehouse clearance deals won't last, and with our lifetime price guarantee, you can rest assured you're getting the best deal. The semi-annual warehouse clearance event, only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com to find a store near you.
Find the perfect space for your business with DRK & Company Realty. Flexible office suites are available. Employees and clients benefit from free parking, front door access, and walkable dining, retail, and hotels at the Polaris Lifestyle Center. Managed by DRK & Company Realty, one of Central Ohio's most trusted leaders, this safe, well-maintained property offers dedicated on-site management and responsive maintenance. Grow your business at an address designed for success at 470 Old Worthington Road. Visit drk-realty.com to learn more.